Welcome to the Grow Your Business podcast. Listen in as we discuss all things business, growth, and marketing with business owners, thought leaders, and entrepreneurs. And now, here's your host, founder of Roundhouse, the creative agency, Saul Edmonds.
Oh, hey everyone. This is the Grow Your Business podcast. And today I happen to be speaking with Daniel from Ferris Wellbeing. Daniel, how are you on this fine Tuesday?
I'm doing well, doing really well. I'm looking forward to this conversation and having a bit of a chin wag. So I appreciate you giving up some time to have me on.
Hey, it's what I do.
Hey, that's what it's about.
It's what, I mean, it would be, it's one of sort of the great pleasures of being able to do a podcast. And the surprise, I guess, now in retrospect for me about that is that outside of the fact that it's obviously a podcast, it's just an awful lot of, it's like having a really good in-depth chat that you don't kind of really have in this same way. So for people who don't as yet, this is what I really always sort of say at the start, because it's it's primarily for people who don't, which is probably like a lot of people who don't know who you are. Daniel McCulloch from Ferris Wellbeing.
Yep.
What do you do? And what, and I guess just a bit of a short sort of annotated history about how you got to be here.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, we won't go through the biological makeup of how I'm physically able to be here, but let's go through me
Your
as a
whole
business.
Childhood.
Yeah. Let's go through that. So essentially, yeah, I'm the founder of Ferris Wellbeing. My business, what we do is we provide mental health education and training. So essentially, in a nutshell, our focus is around empowering and educating other people, whether it's workplaces, communities, around how to support someone else who may be struggling with their mental health or going through a mental health crisis. So how to have a conversation, what to say, what to do, how to navigate that, and where to go for help. So we do that through mental health training and workshops, and some of the core ones that we do are around what you call mental health first aid training and suicide first aid training and other sort of leadership mental health and wellbeing training as well. So that's what we do, and that's what I do as part of my business. Developed it initially as a bit of a side business back in 2020, and then, probably halfway through 2023, started thinking maybe this is what I want to do full time. Like, you know, because I'm very passionate around that space, around giving that people that knowledge and education. So, yeah, halfway through last year, made that decision and then prepped and planned. And since the start of 2024, I've been running it full time. So took the plunge, now or never. And
it's exciting.
It's been a journey. Yeah, it's been exciting. I learn a lot. So that's my business. But do you want to know a little bit about my initial background and how I got here as well?
Yeah. I certainly do. Please go ahead.
Oh, no worries. So I have a bit of a mixed grill, I call it, for a background. So I started in physical education teaching. And then from that, I ended up going and working for a charity organization where we used to work with schools and train up classroom teachers on how to do physical activity, health and well-being, work with schools and leadership teams within schools around promoting health and well-being, building well-being within that culture. Did that, then jetted off to Canada. Lived over in Canada for a while and did random stuff over there. Came back broke after about 10 months, as you do. So
all the skiing. Did you do too much skiing?
Oh, a little bit, but I'm not a crazy or a wild ski buff or snowboarding buff. Like, I don't mind it, but that's not. I just wanted to go and experience the world. I traveled, but I wanted to go and live in a different country. Had a mate over there. So lived there, came back broke. Worked for the charity organisation again for another couple of years across Melbourne and country Victoria originally, and then didn't learn my lesson the first time and then went back over to Canada again with a bit more money this time and travelled around and lived in Toronto. And then I did random things like worked in educational sales. So I learned around sales and business development. And then that's where I met my partner, who's now my wife. So she's Canadian. She's originally from Edmonton in Alberta. Right. So in the country there. So we moved back there and I was a recruiter. Like, so I learned to become a recruiter and then ended up moving back to Australia again, broke a second time. And then where I worked was I worked at the Royal Children's Hospital down in Melbourne. I essentially oversaw all the health and wellbeing programs for all the 6,000 staff there at the hospital. So I did that for about 3 years, which was great. Wrote the mental health strategy, built a peer support program from 5 peer supporters. When I left, I had about 77, I think. So, and that's where I became a mental health trainer because I didn't have a budget at the time. And so I wanted to really keep that in that teaching element. So I did that, become a trainer there, and then COVID lockdowns, couldn't afford a house, didn't have children, all the, you name it, like every other Victorian at the time, ended up jetting up to Queensland and, worked for the Australian Defence Force where I oversaw all the mental health trainings for pretty much all the bases across Queensland. So I did that, all while developing a side business. So that's probably a little bit of my working background, but I guess when you ask like why I do what I do and what started it, it was a few years ago, I was supporting someone who was really struggling with their mental health. And at the time, and this was over in Canada at the time, I didn't have the skills and knowledge that I have now. And so it was quite scary for me trying to navigate that, trying to support this person, but it was also scary for them trying to go through it. And yeah, it was challenging because sometimes I didn't know what to say, didn't know what to do, how to navigate that, where to go and all the rest. And so that sort of planted the seed. And then so now that's essentially why I do what I do is to, if I would have had that knowledge and skills back then, that would have been a little, would have helped a little bit. It wouldn't have fixed everything, but it would have given me a lot more confidence and knowledge. So now with my background and skills, that's what I'm passionate about is giving people the confidence and knowledge on how to have a conversation, what to say and what to do. So that's sort of my why, essentially.
Yeah, it seems to me, I mean, I can only imagine I'm sort of not really having to having been in any scenario like that, but just knowing generally how I would imagine I would feel and what, you know, I suppose like a lot of other people would too. It seems like an awfully big responsibility to sort of to kind of be I guess even okay with the skills to be able to help somebody with that sort of event, like, because it's a very significant thing. It's not just like, you know, you're helping out someone with a service, you know, and the sort of really the consequences aren't that great. Like how did you, I guess, when you first, like, you had the, you know, it's not really an advantage, but having that experience and being the catalyst, then to, you know, at least you were put into the scenario where, I guess, in one respect, you then went, okay, well, now I, you know, I didn't know what I was doing, and in order to do it properly, in case, you know, it happens again, or then to help other people, like when you actually came to that realization that that's what you wanted to do, was there like an element of like maybe fear or like, you know, am I going to be able to do it, or were you past that, like in like that sort of like moment? I'm just like trying to imagine myself like if
I'm, how do you get to that point?
yeah how do you get to that point of of going, oh, I'm okay with this now?
Yes.
It's a pretty big deal, right? Like it's.
Yeah. And I guess it can be, but knowledge is power, right? Knowledge is power, and educating yourself in itself can strip away a lot of the fear, whether it's, you know, fear of having the conversation, or whether it's the fear of, all right, well, what about if I'm actually going out and educating others on how to have that conversation or where to go about it? So I'm a big one for educating and learning. And so when I first sort of started this, I'd already had lived experience of supporting other people. And now I also have lived experience of going through challenges myself. So I've got both sides of it as well. But it's all around knowledge and education. And it can feel really scary and feel really challenging for people, and rightly so. However, knowing where to go for help and just having some tools in your back pocket to know how to navigate that conversation can strip away a lot of that, the fear. Like you get the classic what ifs, right? The what if I say the wrong thing? You know, what if I make things worse? What if I put the idea in their head and then they go off and, you know, do something to, you know, hurt themselves? Like all those what ifs come out. You know, and that can be challenging to try and navigate. But once you learn more, whether it's learning how to have a conversation, learning where to go for help, or even from my perspective, learning how to run a business or learning how to then pass that knowledge on to other people, once you get that knowledge and education behind you, you just feel more confident. And then everything else sort of flows. We're never going to be perfect at it, but it just strips away that fear and that anxiousness in a way as well.
Yeah. I mean, that's exactly right. And when you say it like that, it puts it back into the context of like all education about anything, right? You know, but there's the, you know, I guess like I fell into that, you know, into I guess a certain frame of mind that I'm not aware of it. Plus also the topic itself is more heavy. So therefore, you know, the education around it might be like harder, or it might be this, but it's all those like unknown things, right? It's like the unknown. It's like the, I can't remember who said this, but it's like that idea of 99% of all things that you think may happen, never happen. And so like, there's always these, you're kind of always filling in the blanks, right? Like with a lot of things you're going, or somebody doesn't say something, or they, and you assume there's something wrong, or they might just be sick, you know, it might be, or they may have had something awful happen to them, or they've had like a bad day. It's like the old problem, the sort of extreme version of what we're talking about is the misinterpretation of things via email, you know, people going, or they like accidentally left caps on. So I'm not shouting at you, you know, and all these things that people assume. But I can see, like when you were talking about your previous, you know, history and things that you've done, I was going, oh, actually, they seem kind of diverse and they seem all over the shop, and you kind of position it a bit like that. But I was like, actually, that kind of make a lot of sense. There's a lot of similar, there's like, you know, PE teaching and you then, you know, the whole teams you'd already had, and your obvious like passion for education, like that then was flowing through like a range of different things you said. It was like, oh, education. So that's been a common factor. And these other things, then you had this other experience, and that plus that equals, it's sort of funny in life, isn't it? How like you do actually have underlying stuff that you might not even realize you're passionate about. And it just seems like it's because you've done it a lot or you fell into it, but it's kind of both really, isn't it?
It's funny. Like, it's mixed grill, but pretty much everything of my working background and lived experience background, whether it's myself or supporting someone else, every little element of my background has actually been perfect for my job here and my business here now. Like, you know, from the education piece, yes, you know, teaching and knowing when I'm running my training courses and workshops teaching people, I'm not there to put my own bias on it. I'm not there to put my own sort of... Some people can get over passionate and dive into certain little elements of things that, you know, are interesting, but maybe not the most relevant for the training that we're doing. And so my, like having that teaching background knows that, okay, this is what people need to learn and this is what people need to get out of the training. And this is what I want them to walk away with and the skills and everything like that. And so the teaching side actually makes it really easy to facilitate and navigate questions and curly questions and different personalities and things like that. But then you got the business side and sales and, you know, meetings and learning how to use technology like CRMs and all these things that I was doing as a recruiter and in sales and that sort of thing from a business perspective. has tied in really well. So it's actually perfect in a way. And then you've just got my passion for it too.
And you've got, and you have these reflections that only make sense then in the future, which is then now that you have your business. I actually had like a similar, I guess like a similar one in a way a little while back. I was like, I just generally had this thought of like, because we've had our own small business for quite a while now, my wife and I. And so I never then went into, I think I had a couple of other design related jobs before that, but I never most of my professional designer life has been in our own business.
Mm.
And I thought, I've never really had any experience. I just had that random thought. I was like, and then I was like, actually, that's really not true at all. There's actually, when we were growing up, like my dad, even though like he was in transport and doing other things, he was doing his own thing in a lot of ways and was quite entrepreneurial. Then we had like a corner store and my mum ran that for years. And then after school, we bought another corner store and I ran that for years. And then at the Queensland College of Art, I actually ran the retail store selling art supplies. And I was like, actually, there's like a bunch of stuff that I was already doing that I never kind of considered was significant. I didn't think about it. Like, actually, they're really important things. There's a bunch of other stuff. And then and just the whole education thing too. Like my mum was a teacher. And then I originally, when I thought that I, should get some sort of, I considered to be like a proper job at the time, I was like, I'll become a teacher. And then I became a high school teacher, was never able to get a job at that time because there were no jobs for teachers. And so I was like an art teacher and like a special sort of needs teacher. I didn't end up getting a job. And I was like, oh, that's probably for the best, because then started our own business and was doing other stuff. And then all those things, then those things too, it was like, oh, that's always been something that I've liked too. And then I've taught other things, taught at Queensland College of Art and other things. So it's all those things, the business sort of were happening, and then they only make sense in the future when you're reflecting on them. Hey, like you go, it's the looking back on like what was my journey idea, and initially going, nah, it seems like pretty random, and then you piece them together and you go, that's not true at all. There's like all these elements. Mm. It's funny, isn't it? Because
100%. And like another element was for me is after I come back broke the second time from Canada, I really wanted to learn more around personal finance. I was not interested in this sort of stuff growing up, like as a teenager, early 20s, not interested in any of that sort of stuff. But when I'd come back, I got interested in personal finance and money management and share investing and like all that sort of thing, and learned, there's three pathways to financial autonomy. It's investing in shares, investing in property, investing in yourself. And I was like, okay, well, where can I go down these pathways? But I was never interested in financial, like cash management. But then when I did, and that's also translated to now running a business and managing money and finances and income and expenses and all those sorts of things. So it's like perfectly aligned. And I guess I'm interested in all those areas. So that's another reason why I run my business, is because I'm curious and I've always been curious and I love learning. Yeah. And so I'm curious on different technologies. I'm curious about different templates that I see. I listen to podcasts and I'm just generally curious around all those sorts of things. And then that all helps with the business too, right?
Yeah. I mean, like from a designer point of view, because we had this conversation before about when I was like, oh, hey, Daniel, I like your logo, like your brand and everything. And you told me the story of all of that, which we can get into as well. But what I find, I mean, this isn't, I'm sure, not a broad brush where, this applies to everyone, but I find to some extent, whether it's accidental or I'm not sure where I sit on the whole accidental fate thing. I think it's a bit, bit from column A, a bit from column B. But it's like, I think to some extent, the fact that you ended up, you know, coming to the point where you worked with somebody who did you that great logo and had that concept around it is also ultimately a reflection of how you, of probably things you were talking about being a curious person, because that's like seems to be a common thread with a lot of entrepreneurs and people who are, you know, sort of trying to do things in different industries, different ways, is that they're going, oh, I'm not sure about this. I want to find out about this. And then it's not just you doing stuff. It's that you end up working with another person who, I mean, I don't know those people from what's the agency name? It's
who created my logo or no?
Finn?
One of my best mates has his business. He's the one they helped sort of with the inspiration around the logo, the name, even the name itself, right? So, but I've always been one of those people that I'd never want to be the smartest man in the room. And if I am, there's a problem, right? So I always lean on people who have those skills and expertise in those fields instead of me just waffling on and trying to make it up. It's like, why not lean on the people who are experts in those fields, who know about all of that? And that's, I've been a big advocate for that, whether it's accountants, whether it's the website, whether it's design. It's like, I never want to be the smartest man in the room. So I'm always leaning on those types of people, even business mentors and things like that. Cause I don't know it all and I never will. Yeah. And so, I really leant on them when I was coming up with, and my wife as well, coming up with the name and coming up with the logo. And it's all, I guess you could circle back and I can explain it in a little bit around it all and the listeners around the logo, but it all circles back to the why, like a deeper why and the deeper meaning and purpose. And once you understand that, it gives you that power and value. And I think in a second when I talk about it all, it'll just pretty much like it'll be a penny drop moment. You go, oh, yeah, I get it, right?
Yeah, and I mean, because it – and also the thing too, just say for me, because I can't help it. Like my brain never switches off when I'm looking at stuff. I'm like, oh, yeah, this and that, you know, just looking at fonts or whatever. I can't turn it off. So straight away what I sort of noticed too, because we're also illustrators and often a tendency for a lot of sort of brands, probably mostly for good reasons, is that they don't end up being sort of illustrative. And you talk to like a lot of, you know, people about when they're talking about logo and the brand and the logo part of your brand, it's just that one part, is that they go, and I mean, I've even said this to people. I mean, people go, I want to, you know, imbue everything under the sun into the logo so it expresses every single thing it could possibly express. And I go, well, it doesn't really need to do that. And that's true a lot of the time. But then yours is a really kind of cool exception because it actually does. Like it actually does. It is an illustration. It is both, you know, a logo, but then it's illustrative of the idea in a pretty literal way. And then I'm sort of let you explain what that is, because people will be, you know, once they see the link like from the podcast over to your website, they'll be like, oh, they'll listen to it upon reflection and go, oh yeah, right. And it's the style it's done in. It's still graphical, but illustrative. And being an illustrator myself, I was like, that's cool. That's like a really great. And then, I mean, it was probably I had the advantage of already talking to you about it.
Yeah. And
you explaining it as I was almost looking at it. So I was like, oh, very good. That's like, it's a great example of imbuing like the stuff that's right at the heart of what you do.
So I'm really happy with where it landed, and I guess it's all circles back to the why. And once you understand, you will know me as a person and me as a business and where my business wants to get to and why we do what we do. So for everyone listening, it'll be a penny drop moment, but it's like, so my business is Farris Wellbeing. And so Farris is a Latin word and it's Latin for lighthouse. And so the logo of my business is a lighthouse. And so when we dive a little bit deeper and you start to get an understanding of the purpose of a lighthouse, if you're thinking of, you know, a ship coming into port during stormy seas, right, there's going to be wind everywhere, you know, lots of waves, like quite a scary, challenging time. What is the role of a lighthouse? And the role of a lighthouse is to guide the way, be there as a support beacon during that storm so they can lean on them, right? They can support if they need to. They can navigate them into safety. They're there to use their light, to shine a light, shine the path on the way through. So if you think about all the traits of a lighthouse, it's a support beacon. It's not there to take over for the ship, but it's not there to make the ship sail through. It's there for the support. It's there to shine a light. It's there as that safety blanket. And that's essentially as people, and what I do with my business is we do mental health and education and training. We're essentially teaching people how to become a lighthouse for others. So they're not there to take over. They're there as a support. So whether that's just someone struggling a little bit with their mental health or someone going through a crisis and they just can't see their way out, they can't see their way to help. That's what we are trying to be as lighthouses. We're the people there to shine the light on where to go for help if they don't know where to go. We're there to be that phone, you know, be that, you know, person they can connect with to call if they need a little bit of extra help or guidance there as well. So all the traits of a lighthouse is essentially what I do with my education and training and teaching people to become a lighthouse for others. So when you start to understand that, that's essentially my business, that's my values, that's who I am as a person. Mm. It's pretty much all I am encapsulated in that logo, and it also explains what we do and why we do it.
Yeah, so it's a wonderful, you know, it's you know, I know this probably sounds like I'm like landed on pretty thick, but like the fact is, hey, I don't want anything from you, Daniel, but like I'm just sort of saying it is a great example. Like it's a good example of you know, just not from only the design perspective that it looks great and it's got, you know, the resolution. I actually yesterday before our podcast, and I was just making some notes, I took the time to actually go over to their site, and I saw they had like some little examples they have it set up. So they go the original ideas, then another option that they were doing, and then where they landed, I think they say.
Yep.
And I was like, oh, that's cool. That's also sort of nice. But it's interesting because it's interesting, like from as a part of that story, especially in your case where like this is such a sort of elemental core part of you in a way that's not just, you know, a superficial art. It's like sort of represents this, and you know, I put this angle here because, you know, it means, you know, whatever, you know, it's like it's much more than that. And so it's nice, and it's a great example of like the power of good design with like then what you're doing, the reflection of those two things. And actually there's some good, they did some nice artwork that I, for some reason I missed before, where they did those nice sort of, photo overlays of,
yep,
there's like you, and I was like, oh, they're nice. They're really sort of melancholy and, a bit, I don't know. They, you know, overlaid, photographic with some other things, and there's sort of a little bit dreamy and I'm thoughtful, but they're really good too. So anyway, props to them. I've no idea. I've never met them ever before, but
they're great. And we've always tried to come at it that way, where it's gets people to think a little bit, or there's meanings behind it, you know, whether that's values or the reasons, but there's, it gets people to think more, you know, and explore more and be curious a little bit, because part of it is also everyone perceives it differently. everyone might look at the piece of whatever it is on the website or look at my logo and they'll think one concept, but then someone else might look at it and think completely different. And again, that's exactly like what it is with everyone's mental health. Everyone is going through something different and it's unique to them and it's their perceptions and it's their reality. It's nobody else's. And so when you start to look at it from those angles as well, it starts to encapsulate that every aspect of mental health too. And, you know, also the element of like, don't assume, right? Don't assume that your perception of what you see and what you're taking away is going to be the same as somebody else's, because it might not be. It's the same with mental health.
Dramatically different, right?
Yep, exactly. And we're not assuming that, you know, just because one person we're seeing signs in someone that we're thinking, oh yeah, we've seen this before. It's the same example. It's the same struggle where it's completely different. You know, they're different people, they're different backgrounds, they're different potential cultures. So one of the things we try and teach people is just don't assume. Don't assume you know what's going on. Don't assume you know what the problem is. Don't assume you know what the right solution is without actually having the conversation with them in the first place, because you could be coming in going, yep, I'm seeing this in this person. I think you need to go here and you just need to go and do this and you'll be fine. And they're like, you know, that's what you think they need, but it's not a, what we're teaching people is it's not about us. It's about the other person and it's about what they want and what they need and how we can help them. And so it's starting to shift that mindset of people just going in thinking they have the answers before you've even had the conversation or before you've even spoken to the other person around how we can help. So there's so many different layers to this that we could go down for sure.
Oh yeah, 100%. I mean, how was I just going to ask then? How often, or I guess like how much do you find that it's really important for people that are having some assistance or, you know, just or at whatever level they're at, that the importance for them of being understood and feeling like that nobody does understand it? Like how is that sort of something that you come across often once people start, you know, either sharing aspects of what's actually happening, that people go, now that's a reflection, I guess, of being feeling isolated perhaps, and like that, even though there's like a bunch of people around them who, you know, a good friends or family, that they still don't actually feel that they're properly understood.
Yeah, and it can be common. And, you know, that's the challenging element sometimes where, you know, for some people struggling, and I'm going back to it myself, it's like you might have people around you, but when you're struggling, it's hard to see that, and you get caught up so much in your own internal voice.
Yeah.
And a lot of the time your internal voice isn't as nice to yourself as it is to everybody else, right? So you get caught up in that. And
it's not always your
sometimes,
best friend.
No, and it can be hard. And when you, if you know, people who may be suffering through depression, it's a lot of negative voice, right? And it's a lot of negative voice at yourself. You know, I'm a failure. No one can help me. Like, you know, people would be better off without me. Like, you know, that it's all around. A lot of the time it can be common to be that negative voice internally. And it's really hard to see outside of that. And you might have people around, but some people may not have anyone around or may never have even shared that before, what's going on. And so you feel alone because you just can't see outside. It's like you're in a tunnel and you can't see the light at the end of the tunnel. And you don't really, excuse my language, but I say you don't really give a shit about what's going on outside because it's too hard to see. It's too hard to do anything apart from just try and survive yourself. And so, you know, that can help, that can make you feel alone or make you feel really, I guess, scared and overwhelmed. And I guess from our perspective as the helpers, that's a reason why we need to be initiating these conversations and we need to be noticing those small signs and we need to be having these conversations and not these superficial ones like, you know, hey, how are you? It's like, yeah, yeah, good, no worries. And then away you go. It's like taking the time to stop, notice, open up the conversation and be real and genuine and actually talk to a person about how they're feeling, because they may never have even shared what they were going through.
Mm.
And once, sometimes when you're going through a whole lot of that internal negativity or those challenges, when you voice them, right, you can take that power away. Like you're actually, it feels like you're not alone if you can talk to someone about it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's, yeah, it's very true. Like even I find, you know, it's like, yeah, I guess it's the same side of like, you know, or the different side of the same coin or the other way around, same side of a different coin. I'm not sure which way to say it. But like when you have like anything, say that is stressful in your life, whether it's like money matters or whether it's this or that, those things, like you have an idea. I'm speaking about this with my wife just recently, and I think it's because it was either me, I think it was me, yeah. And it was like something that I hadn't addressed, or it just like things grow in your mind and you go, and it becomes some, it's not even logical. Like it's not like you're going, this is A, B, C. It's just, it's bigger than, you know, it seems big and scary, which always sounds so odd when you say it like that, because people are like, ah, don't worry about it, it'll be all right. But like then you go, but then as soon as you address it, then it's a little bit like what you said. It sort of seems to magically dissipate. It's like the, it's like a little bit like the Wizard of Oz idea. It's like the Wizard of Oz in the movie is like this big booming figure, but the reality is that it's just like a man in like a cloak. It's just some guy. And he's got like, you know, and it's not, you know, it's nothing. It's like all sort of smoke and mirrors. And like, you know, that's, you know, I think that power of just addressing, you know, and then obviously having somebody like in that situation, you can't do it on your own. Yeah, to have somebody, or I mean, like maybe some people can, but that power of just that third party, that extra person, like is it in your, you know, experience, like it's obviously a lot more complex, which is why you have the training and you go through this process. It's not as easy, like you were saying, of someone going, hey, you're right. And they're, what are they going to do? They're going to go, no, I'm not. But that's not going to be, ever generally be the first answer, is it? They're not going to like just all of a sudden open up. Oh, like, yes, I've just been waiting for somebody to ask me.
You know, it's not like, it's not Australia. Our culture is very, it's very hard. We're very hard to navigate past the superficial. Like, it's like, hey, how are you? It's like, yeah, all right. It's like, what's been going on? Nothing. It's like, not much. Or like, you know, what have you been up to lately? Yeah, stuff all. And you're like, I've tried. So Aussie culture doesn't do it. Doesn't help. Like, all right, when we're trying to navigate that. Right. But people feel like it's natural for people to feel like, oh, this has to be a really complex thing. Like it's mental health, maybe people don't know about it. It has to be really complex, like there must be so much we have to navigate. But at the end of the day, it's not. Think of it like from a physical perspective. If you were talking to someone who had hurt their back or was struggling with a limp or, you know, had broken their arm, you'd navigate that conversation. You'd be like, oh, how did that happen? Like, is there anything we can do to help? You know, are you seeing anyone about that broken arm? Like, oh, what does your recovery period look like? You know, is there anything else we can do to help with that broken arm while you're healing? Like all of those questions that you would ask someone if it was a physical injury or a physical illness is exactly the same things that we can do when it comes to mental health as well. You can still talk to people. It's for some people, it feels like it's still taboo, but it's not. It's just a conversation. It's being real. It's being a caring human being. And being present in the conversation, just ask them and say, hey, like, what's been going on lately? How have you been feeling? You know, are you seeing anyone about what's been going on? Have you spoken to anyone else? Is there anyone else in your life who would know about this? The same sort of questions that you would ask from a physical perspective, you can ask from a mental health perspective. And that's a lot of what we talk about in my trainings, is it's not complex. it can be really simple. We just put some four walls around it to navigate that conversation. And then if they get the opportunity to talk, it's like, what is it? A problem shared is a problem halved. Can help release what I call that pressure valve, release some of that tension. And if someone's there and they're talking to you, you can feel like you've been heard and you feel like you're not alone. And so same questions apply. What's potentially you need to consider are your responses, right? So I'll give you an example. We want to, if we're talking with someone, someone's sharing, we want to avoid going straight into fixed mode, I call it, right? You know, I'm struggling. I've lost my job. I've lost I've had a relationship breakdown, you know, whatever it is. And we're already in the back of our mind going, right, like, how can I fix this? Like, what can we do? All right, we'll probably have to get you here first, and then we're going to go and talk to this person, and then I think, yeah, I'll help you with your resume, and then we're going to try and go. So automatically in the back of your mind, you're already trying to fix the problem, and a lot of the time this is not the space. When we're talking to them about it, you want to avoid that fixed mode mentality. You want to try and – that comes later. You actually just want to be present. And because it's not about what we think they need. It's about what they need, right? It's about that listening and silence.
It's interesting. I feel like that's a key, like the listening piece, like of being a good listener is, you know, I feel like I'm okay. And actually having the podcast has probably helped. This probably helped me be a good listener, you know, I don't think I ever realized that until I'm sort of now. It's probably helped me a bit. I mean, sometimes, you know, you like to have your say and you like to get in and say this. And I do have a problem with that sometimes. But being a good listener can be like when I think you probably got the right mindset. I'm not sure exactly how to describe that. Maybe you'll have some good words to help me there. But it can be really rewarding because like you end up finding out a bunch of stuff that you wouldn't have found out about if you had just been talking the whole time or not even that extreme, or you hadn't been like listening more or just going, letting like somebody keep talking. And not going, you know, and then like if you like feel the urge to be in fixed mode or something because like maybe you're that sort of person and you're like, oh, I should be able to do this. So like, you know, I'm pretty good at like helping people. And you know, and then you just sort of say it. Like how much of that is in your experience, are there people who are better naturally at that? Or is that for most people more of a learnt skill that they have to train, like sport, that they have to practice being better at listening?
It's a good question, actually. I think naturally for some people, you know, they're natural listeners. You know, and some people have that personality where, you know, they're happy to sit back, you know, listen more, ask a few more questions, just get other people talk and then hear everything and then give their two cents and things like that. But then there's others, it can be a real challenge, right? Like I'm one of them. I'm not perfect. I love a chin wag. I love a chat, right? However, I also recognize and are aware when it's a time and place. And so, yeah, for some people it's a skill, right? But I like to say like we've got two ears and one mouth for a reason. And when it comes to supporting someone who may be struggling with their mental health, it's like one of the most powerful things you can actually do is listen. Because sometimes people don't even need any fixing. Sometimes they just need someone, what I call, to sit in the shit with them, right? And so one of the most powerful things you can do is actually just zip the lip, allow for silences, and just give the other person an opportunity to talk about what's going on in their mind. Now, there's questions that we can ask and things that we can do to help encourage the person to open up.
Yeah, to step a bit.
Yeah, but the questions don't need to be complex. It's not a technical thing. It's just coming at it like from a sense of being curious. So Sol, can you tell me more around when you were learning, when the penny dropped for you that you needed to be a better listener as a podcast? Mm. Was there a moment? Can you tell me more about when that happened?
Mm.
Right. So a question or like, help me understand a little bit more about what you were just talking about there.
Yeah,
what does that mean
it's,
for you?
It's, right? it's the, is it like the add on to the existing topic as opposed to, oh, by the way, and then like you're driving down the road or you're going down the stream. I like a good metaphor if you hadn't realized already, Daniel. but you're going down the stream and instead of, and it's easier to guide the boat if you're just like a little bit left and you go down another channel as opposed to then all of a sudden and it flows better overall too. It's more seamless, like the conversation being the stream can just be like it's a part of what they're already talking about and just add on prompt as opposed to, oh, by the way, I've got a great idea and like sharp turn left. And then like, you know, because it's easy then in conversations for people to forget what train of thought you're even on, right?
Mm.
Sometimes. And then that itself can just be, that was really important to me and now it's just gone, you know. And there's that too. There's the whole conversation, you know, like, especially if you're in a good place with a conversation, I don't know, like, is the flow of a conversation once, like, somebody's, you know, starts to say, open up, and that's good. How important is that idea of sort of maintaining that easy flow an important part of, you know,
yep,
all the things we're talking about?
Yeah. And so something to help that is the training that I do, or it's called mental health first aid training, right? And we teach people that they have like a it's called an action plan. Right, which is essentially a framework on how to have a conversation. And we just teach people how to use the framework. So as an example, the framework's called ALGE, which is A-L-G-E-E. Right, so A stands for approach the person, assess and assist with any crisis. So it's just about how to approach the person and if they're in a crisis, how to support them because that's the priority. L stands for listen and communicate non-judgmentally. So how to have a conversation, how to ask questions and how to listen and how to show some empathy and put our judgments aside. Right. Then we have G, so give support and information. So that might just be emotional support, practical support, right? Might be information around creating some awareness around mental health or the certain signs you're seeing. And then you've got the E1, which we call it, is like encourage a person to get appropriate professional help. So it's just encouraging them to guide themselves to a professional if they haven't seen anyone, or encourage them to go back to see the mental health professional if they have previously. So it's all around getting them to professional help. And then the second E in the ALGE framework is encouraging other supports. So looking at what I call the safety net. Are there other people around who can help them out? You know, is there anything else they can do to help along the way, whether that's self-care or looking after yourself? So it's like once you learn this little framework, and I still use it in the back of my mind, it just helps guide the conversation and it takes away that fear of the, oh, am I doing this right? Am I doing this wrong? Like, what do I do next? It's just, you just think about the framework. You approach them, you listen, you give some information or some support if they need it. You encourage them to get professional help. And then you're looking at who else around them and what other supports can we sort of implement or follow-ups can we implement throughout that. So I love your little analogy around the river because you're there. The framework's just there, like you said, just little turns here or there. But the framework's also there to teach you, okay, if there's a waterfall coming up and they're not aware of it, then we take control of the boat and we pull them off to the side and we try and keep them safe. You know what I mean? So yeah, there's both elements to it, but it's not complex. It's just around being a genuine, caring human being and being curious. And it's about them, not us. It's about what they need and focus on them.
Yeah. Yeah. To get past, because I'm just sort of, as you're talking, I'm just imagining, because like I think I'm sort of mentioned, I did with person that I knew some mental first aid training like years ago. So I was already sort of aware of the general sort of thing. But I even remember at the time, and then like as we're talking too, I'm like imagining myself in the shoes of like someone else, especially who might be the sort of person that wants that. Like you get a feeling, you're having a conversation with somebody and you get a feeling they're like, this is going pretty good. Yeah, this is going, like it feels, for whatever reason, right? Like it feels like, oh, this is positive. And like how often do you say, fine, we're saying that scenario, somebody feels that then they could do more, but then they shouldn't be. They should just be like sticking to the general framework, and that they go and that they are too, that they feel they can do too much when they should just be like sticking to the plan. Because one, yeah, it'd be like me going, you know, I'm starting to doing some home handyman job, and all of a sudden partway through that process I go, I'm feeling pretty good about this. I think I'll just build the rest of the house. I think I'll just like, I'm just gonna start building the house, and then you just screw everything up. You know, I mean, I'm not sure if that's a good metaphor or not, but you get so excited, and like it sort of comes from a good place, you know, of people going like, is that something that you come across with people getting like too like, whoa, this is going really well, and then they.
I'm going to give you my favorite answer out of the entire training, that in any training I do around this space, I'm going to give you my favorite answer, and you're probably not going to like it, and everyone doesn't like it, but it just is what it is. So depends. Depends, right? I get asked these questions, and it's like, well, you know, how do you know when it's going to, if it's going well or if it's not going well, or if you could have done more or not? And it's like, oh, gee, like that really depends. Like that, and one conversation you might have and you're like, this is going really, really well. Perfect. And another one, you might be sitting there going, there's like a lot going here. I don't know where I'm at. Like done my left from my right. Like, oh, I'm getting a bit stressed here. Like, so it really does depend. And that's what I love about. Well, what the training that I do is, it's just around the frame. It's around the framework. It's around giving people the tools. And it's not about like, sometimes engineers, sorry, any engineers listening to this, but sometimes engineers really struggle because they love a good yes, no. They love a good plan, right? Like yes, no. Okay. If they answer this, yes, do this. If they don't do this, yes, do this. And it's like, that's all well and good to have like a set plan. I'm like, right, I'm going to go in the conversation. I'm going to have this and we're going to come out with this outcome and I'm going to get them here and there. And, you know, and you think, you know, this conversation's the way it's going to play out. And then you go and have the conversation. They say something that's not on your flow chart and you're like, whoa, what do I even do here now? Like what? Like I didn't expect that. And so sometimes, right. And sometimes you're going thinking like, yeah, this is going really, really well. I'm just going to go build the rest of the house, like you said. But then what happens if, okay, you start building the rest of the house and something else pops up or something else in the house?
Or you forgot something because you're actually not very good at it. Like you just go, oh, I forgot to do the foundations of the house.
Right. So what I'm going to be doing is I'm going to be giving you the skills to learn how to build it in the first place, and then you can make the decision of when and how and where and what's best and that sort of thing, depending on the type of house, depending on the location, all that. But what I'm about is giving you the confidence and knowledge on how to build in the first place. What you do with that information after that and where you go for any extra help or support is completely up to you. I'm about the confidence piece, all right, the knowledge piece, and then everything else flows from there. So
yeah, it's not all the answers, I guess, is it? Like that's the that's the part which probably, and I kind of laugh when you said about the engineers, because that's, you know, that's once again, sorry to all the engineers, we do love you, you're great people, but like you sometimes you just can't speak human talk properly. it's the logic part, which is obviously why they're very good at what they do, but it's when things don't fit into the box, you know, this like, what do you do? Or how do you handle that situation? And then like, you know, I like how you're saying that too, because it feels to me like forewarning, metaphor coming ahead, here it comes, is that it feels like sort of the underlying structure, like the DNA of the answer. It's like the underlying tools for you to go. So the underlying structure, you give them that, and then whatever evolves or happens after that from the DNA is whatever happens. It's like when you're going, well, it depends, because it's like how many different pathways could that go down? It'd be like infinite, you know, go down as long as it, yeah. Obviously certain things that do happen probably time and time again that you've seen, but still.
Yeah. And I'm a good, like I'm leaning on my physical education background and my anatomy background. It's kind of like we're giving the bones, we're giving the skeleton, and then everyone else can go off and build the muscles around it and build the tendons around it. And, you know, everyone's going to build it a little bit differently. And then everyone's going to, you know, everyone's going to learn some different techniques about how to move and how to crawl and like all, you know. So think about it like that. We're giving the skeletons to it, and then everyone else can go away and put the muscles and put the rest of the body together. And so what I tell everyone in any of the workshops I do is it's just like, it's not the way to go about it. It's a way. They'll navigate that. But if you can feel more confident and knowledgeable in how to navigate the conversation in the first place, you're actually probably going to do the first thing, and that is take the first step in initiating the conversation in the first place, right? And we call it like leaning in to ask the question, leaning in to have the conversation, leaning in if you have noticed something, because they may be struggling or they may not be, but you're not going to know unless you actually initiate and have the conversation in the first place. So that's what I'm all about. And I'm also all about stripping away some of that stigma that's there, that people think, you know, mental health and mental illness is this huge complex thing, where it can be for some people. But at the end of the day, having a conversation about it is not. It's very simple. It's a very simple framework, but each conversation is going to be different. But if you learn about it, you feel way more confident in asking in the first place.
Yeah, because I guess with the whole stigma part of things too, I mean, stigma is not just on the one side of the fence. Like you could have, you know, I would say probably, you know, like even though I would like to think like that doesn't affect me, but like even if you don't have that as a part of yourself, like I'm never going to ask that, and there's the whole stigma thing. Just also the fact that even though that's improved like vastly, you know, in sort of recent years, like I think, and I think that's probably pretty true, right? Like that's, you know, it's, and people talk about it a lot more, but still, even with that, there's for like a lot of people, there's that still cultural, it's like a little, stain sort of still. Yeah, like it's still lingering around, really. Like it's sort of, it's not completely gone. Like even if it's largely removed from cultural sort of norms, it's, you know, and then in some societies, it's obviously way more than other ones or certain environments. And I guess actually just on that subject as a little bit of a segue, do you find there's in particular environments, whether work or sort of whatever, that the prevalence of a stigma, or at least part of it, is still there? Is that still something that is fairly common still? Like, is that still around?
It is, but there goes my depends again. Yes, there is. You're right, we are getting better at it, but I feel we still have a long way to go. And yes, there are certain industries or regions that potentially have a little bit more of that stigma, but I love stripping down I look at it like an onion. I love peeling back the layers of the onion, because people go, oh, there's still stigma there in mental health. And it's like, yeah, but what are the, you know, I love going back to the why and the underlying. So what could be some of the underlying things around stigma for mental health? And you start stripping it back, and it's like, okay, well, there's a stigma there because maybe it's, if I come out and say I'm struggling with my mental health, then, you know, work's going to boot me and I'm going to lose my job, and then how am I going to pay the bills? Or it's, if I come out and say I'm struggling, then people are going to treat me differently. Or if I come out and say I'm, you know, struggling with my mental health, then I'm going to have to get sent to the doctor, and then they're going to send me to hospital. And then, you know, so there's so many different layers of stigma, and it's like, what is it? And then you start to peel back those layers and you go, well, what is that? Well, some of that could be around fear of being treated differently, fear of like a workplace culture. Maybe they don't have that education and training around how to respond or how to navigate that if someone is struggling, or it's fear of what comes next, or fear of what does it look like if you call that phone number, and what are those next steps, and that sort of thing. So
yeah, the unknown, all the unknown things, right? I mean, all these things you actually have no, and you often don't have any evidence to think they're going to be bad.
I'll counter you on that, Silo. It's fear of the unknown, unless you know about it, unless you've educated yourself, and unless you've learnt, right? So there's the common fear of, okay, well, if I see a psychologist, or if I put my hand up and say I'm struggling, you know, I'm going to get sent straight to hospital, and, you know, that's it. It's like, well, actually, that may be the case, or it may not be. It may be that if I come out, I go see a professional, I get the help I need, and I improve on some of the strategies to improve my own mental health, and then I get back and recover. Because, like, gone are the days where, you know, if you're diagnosed with a mental illness, that's it, your life's over. Like, people can recover from a mental illness. People can go on and live long and fulfilling lives going through mental health problems, mental illness. Like, I'm lived experience, like my wife's lived experience of it. Like, you can go on and live long and fulfilling lives. Sometimes it might be challenging, but it's not like your life's over. And that's why I'm passionate around getting out there to and talking about this and sharing it and saying, like, you know, mental health is just like physical health. We all have our good days. We all have our bad days. In between, there's going to be ups and downs, and your life's not over just if you're being diagnosed with depression or anxiety or anything like that. You know, I've got my own lived experience of high anxiousness, severe anxiety during a period of time, and it freaked me out because I'd never gone through it myself. So I didn't have my strategies, didn't have my coping skills. Mm. I was catastrophizing. I had a whole night where I couldn't sleep. I developed tinnitus, high-pitched ringing in my ears, and I was an absolute rabble. But I was able to get help. I went and saw my GP, and I'm now see a psychologist, and I learned strategies. I learned what some of those symptoms were. I learned what was going on for me, and that took away some of that fear, and I learned what works for me, how I can prevent myself getting to that point. And so now I notice it early, and I can be like, okay, yeah, some of this is going on. All right, what can I do? I notice I'm not myself. I'm not 100%. All right, these are my strategies. These are my go-tos to get through it. So it all comes back, Sol, doesn't it, to education, knowledge, 100%. Understanding, normalizing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's everything. Like I see it's in its own small way, it's like a manifestation of that sort of same idea of that everybody is that a lot of people assume that everyone else knows like one thing that they're talking about or they're thinking about. And I don't really think about it logically. You just go, oh, they would know. It's like, so I play squash, and like it's common, like super common thing. I'm sure it's common across heaps of sports, and where you got the let and stroke thing, and somebody and you ask for a let, you don't want to hit the person or whatever. And even though the rules technically in the squash rule book say it's this, this, and this, there's all these like nuances, and all the people who always known but they've never actually read the rules, or the people who knew the rules from like 15 years ago, or the people that, you know, and then everybody, and I still marvel at this. I'm sure I'll see it this evening when I play squash. I'm going to play tonight and come squash. I see it all the time, is that there's all these like nuances of people assuming this and that about a point. And yet everyone's looking at exactly the same thing. So you would assume logically that the outcome would be universally accepted, but there's all these like people filling in the gaps about, you know, all sorts of stuff. So, yeah, I guess why I'm saying that too is that that idea, like, seems to be very common just across almost everything we do, like, and say and interpret or, you know, misinterpret. Like, it's just kind of all around us all the time. So it's not like it's really anything new, but it's then all of a sudden you put it into, you know, a scenario with mental health, and it's like you know, it's much more concentrated, and obviously the consequences, you know, I guess it probably comes down to the perceived consequences too, right? And then the fear and all that stuff we were talking about like, what's going to happen if I do this? Like, yeah, it's like, I'm not going to care too much if I ask for all that and I don't get a stroke in squash. I'll be a bit pissed about it, you know, especially if I thought it was really obvious, you know, but it's not as consequential as, you know, something when it comes to someone else with their mental health. It's like, you know, light and day, but it's like the same concept of, you know, of not knowing and then education. And then, you know, if you sat like everybody down, although I would wager that even if you sat everybody down, say at squash, and said these are the rules, that still all have completely different opinions. But like, it's funny, isn't it? Because it's almost like human nature, you know, that then has to do with what people really want and like other stuff too. It's not just like as straightforward as it, you know, you're looking at this, therefore it should be obvious. It's a lot more sophisticated than that. All the little sort of nuances.
Mm.
So
yeah, it's interesting. And I guess probably further to this point, like for me and my business, another reason why we do what we do is because we spend so much time at work, and so I do a lot of training to support organizations, because a lot of the time organizations will be doing training on physical first aid, right? The amount of times I'd run my training courses and I go, hands up who's done a physical first aid course, and nearly all the hands get put up. Or if I'm running an awareness mental health workshop and I'll go, hands up who's done physical first aid, and again, a lot of the hands come up. Then I go, okay, well, who's done, you know, first aid for mental health? Who's done mental health first aid? And there's like two or three hands go up. So it's another reason for workplaces is a lot of the time their leaders and their managers have just fallen into that management role. Like, they've been very, very good at their job, and then they've got that promotion, and now they're that leader, and now they're that manager. But now they're also in charge of supporting human beings, not just themselves in their work, but now they're navigating challenging conversations with their staff, or someone's struggling with their mental health, and they're like, well, now I've got to – how am I supposed to do this? And they learn by doing, by just going through it, and you figure out on the fly what works and what doesn't, and – could have done that better next time. And so a lot of what I do is actually working with those leaders and managers and those leadership staff around giving them that training, that professional development. So then if they have staff underneath them who are struggling with the mental health, because chances are it's going to happen. Like, it's 1 in 5 Australians in any one year we diagnose with a common mental illness, goes to about 1 in 2 over a lifetime, right? Chances are it's going to happen.
That's very high.
Yeah, it's probably – a lot of experts actually think it's more like 1 in 4, 25% in any one year. And, again, that's diagnosed or would have had the signs to be diagnosed. So that's not even just people struggling with their mental health, you know, going through an event, whatever that is. So chances are you are going to be coming across people at work or in your family life, home life, whatever it is, who is going through something. And so I'm working with organizations, and there's still organizations out there that haven't done any of this formal training, and we're getting a lot better at it, but they're expecting their leaders and their managers to just navigate it without actually any sort of help or guidance or training around it. And so the change that I see in people is just profound. Like, just the other day I was running a training course, and a guy wasn't really sure what we're going to be covering in this mental health first aid training. And he was like, what are we actually going to be covering, and what is this training about? And I was like, well, we're going to be doing a bit of this. We're going to be learning around mental health, and we're going to be learning around the signs and how to navigate a conversation. And these are the topics that we cover. And he's like, oh, right. He's like, this is fascinating, because literally a few days beforehand, he had a staff member come to him, a new parent going through, you know, their struggles, and had just recently come back to work and was showing a lot of these signs and had a couple of sick days off. And this staff manager was like, I didn't know what to say. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to navigate it. I didn't know what to do.
Mm.
And so he goes, now you've told me about this course. Oh, geez, I'm really looking forward to this. I'm like, oh, this is going to be great, because, you know, I'm going to get a bit more guidance. And, you know, then I spoke to him at the end of day one. And even after the first day, he was like, yeah, wow, he's got his manual there with resources and stuff like that. And so we're expecting our managers and leaders to just know how to support staff, so without actually going through some formal training involved. And like, the statistics from mental illness on organizations and workplaces, so for a psychological injury in Queensland, the average period of time off for psychological injury is around 190 days compared to a physical injury claim is about 45 to 50. So for a psychological injury claim, it's 190 days compared to 50 for a physical injury. So you start to think about, okay, what's that look like as an impact to an organization, to the impact to their team, but also what does that look like to as an impact to that staff member having to go through that process and having to navigate that and having to get help and recover and get back. So you start to think about the impacts to workplaces. And it's like, if you're not doing this training, or if you're not doing some form of professional development for your staff, you're actually doing your staff and an organization a disservice, because chances are you're going to be coming across someone, and chances are your staff are probably going through stuff. Yeah. And need a little bit extra help. And so when I learned those statistics, it was just like, wow.
Yeah, that is pretty eye-opening too, because I guess, I mean, probably to some extent, I would imagine there's an element of, you know, because it's unseen, it's like a lot of things. I mean, it's not as possibly as clear-cut, but, you know, it's a lot of things where if people aren't, like, it's easier when things are physical because you can see them and you can experience them. And that's very obvious. And there's always, and people are good at, you know, disguising things. And like you mentioned too, like, there would be a huge amount of people who it's never going to, you know, even crop up. They're never going to get to a point where they're going to talk to anyone, or that anyone might even notice it. And there's all those people. So, like, with all of that in mind, that it's so under the radar, you know, in sort of one respect, but unfortunately, like, there's good, you know, education around there with what you're doing, and more broadly, because, I mean, if I was even just to go, like, I can't remember at all, like, ever, I don't think when I was growing up as a kid, like, there was ever any mention, any, you know, like, maybe there was, but I was, like, too busy just playing cricket or something. I don't know. I probably focusing on, like, other things too. And that's obviously, you know, another factor is your focus isn't on these things we're talking about when you're a kid. But, like, still, like, there wasn't even a thing. It wasn't even – and – it's great that that people are talking about it, but is there also a I'm not sure if risk is the right word, but I'll use that word, the risk that when things become too, you know, there's a element of things become popular and people can fall into a complacency on that, you know, and don't keep, like, driving the horse as hard as they should, you know, forward, because it's really, really important. You know what I'm saying? Like, is that things can sometimes have a tendency. I'm not necessarily saying this is the case, but, like, when things become, you know, so and then everyone's across it and everyone's like, yep, that's really important. And then they kind of like forget if it's not still driven. Yeah,
front and center focused. Yeah.
People are like, oh, yeah, you know, it's important. And then they don't. And then they can fall into complacency.
Yeah. I'll speak from an organizational perspective. There's risk. And so now the really great thing that's come out in Queensland into law is around the psychosocial safety laws now. So organizations have a duty of care to provide a psychologically safe workplace for their staff. Now, mental health education and training is not a silver bullet. It doesn't fix it all, right? But organizations have a duty of care now. And there's been examples of where organizations have not focused on creating a psychologically safe workplace and have been fined like massive amounts of money. And also leaders and directors of organizations can be fined and potentially legally incriminated too if there's like negligence and things like that. And so that's in law in Australia, in Queensland, and a lot of the other states are sort of catching up. So it's wild to me how we're only getting to this point now where, like, you know, physically safe workplaces, everyone's like, yep, slips, trips, falls, let's make sure we've got all the processes, our health and safety reps, we're all over everything physical. And then now we're getting to the point, which is fantastic that it's getting there, to the point where organizations, you need to create a psychologically safe workplace too. So, and that's not like one element is mental health education. So training your leaders, training your staff, being aware of what, you know, the signs are, how to have conversations, support. But it's further than that. It's like, okay, your policies and procedures, like there's so many different elements to the psychosocial safety space, but like it's wild to me that we're 2024 and it's now only a thing. Like some organizations have been great at it, have so many things in place to support their staff, where a lot of organizations now are getting to this point. Now this law has come in and they're all like, oh crap, what are we even doing? And then the high up manager of an organization or the boss or the executive director or whatever hears about, okay, well, there's potential for massive fines and legal incrimination, and they're like, right, what are we doing? And it's like, crap, where do we even start? And so it's probably, is there risk? Yes, there is risk. If you're not focusing on keeping your people safe, both physically and mentally, then yeah, there's risk, but there's things that you can do to put in place, and most organizations are probably already doing them, and that education piece is one of the elements to that as well. Don't get me started on all the rest, but it's really interesting, and that's where I come in. Yeah. I'm not there to fix everything. I'm there to provide that education because that's what I'm passionate about.
And you got to start somewhere, right? Like you have to start 100%. Like everything. Yeah, everything just starts with that little. Yeah, it's almost like the question. You know, like it's almost like what we were speaking about when you're, you know, asking somebody a question. It's like you got to start with that. And I mean, when it comes to you know, leadership and leaders, I can only imagine like how you know, potentially you know, scary, exciting. I'm also like that other guy you were talking about then too, who had like that, the opposite. It was like, wow, this is really fantastic, like thank you. And so there's all those mix of different things that people would experience for different reasons, but at the end of the day, like to actually just go to have that starting point to go, okay, education is a good point to start. It's fun. What's this mental health thing all about? Like some people will be like, I don't know what that's about. They generally know, you know, but just have somebody. But I just wanted to, like, as we're nearing the sort of the end of our podcast, I just wanted to quote what I assume was you, or is on your, I think it's on the website, and I really like it. I just like the phrasing of it, and you say, together we'll navigate the journey towards brighter tomorrows, guided by the light of compassion and connection. I thought that was really good. It was really that sort of when I read that, and that ties into what you're saying at deeper level that at the end of the day, if you're going to be, you know, having these sort of discussions with people after having the right sort of training, it's got to be guided by those core things. It's not just like having any old chat. It's like you got to have the right spirit, you know. And I thought that was really really good, and it's sort of resonated with that straight away. I was like, I like that a lot.
It's about empathy and connection. Like, you strip everything away that we've spoken about, and at the end of the day, it's around being caring, genuine, and empathetic human being. Everything else comes. If you come to a conversation and you bring those elements with a bit of curiosity, but you're real and genuine, that goes so much further than being perfect and knowing exactly what to say and what to do and everything like that. Aussies, we have a really good bullshit meter, don't we? We know when someone's being fake and when someone's being real.
We do. Right? It's true.
Right. So if you take anything away from today's podcast, is just if you can show the person that you're there to help, you're being empathetic, real and genuine, and you just want to help and you're there to care for them.
Yeah.
That's a lot of the time with a little bit of extra education here or there, like that can go so much further than being perfect, because we're never going to be perfect at it. And I'm not, no one is. But those traits go a long way.
Very good. Excellent message. And you've got a quote or two, I believe, as well, that people who've listened to the podcast before, they'll be very used to this, but you've got a couple of one or maybe two.
I got two.
You got two,
I got two. And like the first one is by like Franklin Roosevelt, and I love this one. And it's a simple one. So it's "A smooth sea never made a skilled sailor." And I love it because it's like we all have our challenges, but if you can go through it with curiosity and you come out the other side, you know, your challenges like help you to build your skills and your resilience and your strategies. So I love it because it's like, yeah, we're all going to go through challenges, but if we can come at it curiously and we can learn.
Embrace it a bit.
Exactly. Embrace it. So that's the first one. And the other one was from Christopher Reeve, the old Superman.
Yep.
And this one's more around Ferris and the lighthouse. It's at some time, often when we least expect it, we all have to face overwhelming challenges. When the unthinkable happens, the lighthouse is hope. Once we find it, we must cling to it with absolute determination. When we have hope, we discover powers within ourselves we may have never known. The power to make sacrifices, to endure, to heal, and to love. Once we choose hope, everything is possible. And so I got told about this one, and with the link to the lighthouse, and now like another reason that lighthouse is hope, it's like, hey, just be a lighthouse to others as well. So it's just very simple takeaways.
Yeah. And your brand is like a great, you're an advocate, you're a great advocate then for it, and then it for you too. So, I mean, if that's the only, you know, thing that people get out of it, and they're not like me and like going, oh, great illustration and all the other stuff as well, that's all you take out of it, then that's pretty damn good. Like that's excellent. And how do people best find out about you? Where do they go on?
Yep.
On Daniel?
Yeah. So probably, a great way if you want to learn more is through our website, so www.farriswellbeing.com.au. So Farris is Pharus. Hopefully they'll look at that through the show notes, whatever that is. So the website's great for more information. We have all the information around. There's a little 2-minute video explaining more about me, my background, my why, and also some of the offerings and courses and workshops. They can email me, Daniel@farriswellbeing.com.au, or you can, a lot of the time I sit on LinkedIn. So find me on LinkedIn, Daniel McCullough, Farris Wellbeing. I'm always hoping to have a chat, find out, like just linking with other people if people want to know more. I've always been that way. Hopefully our podcast has pretty much shown the type of person I am. So people can reach out. I'm more than happy to help if they want more information. yeah, if I can help people, then that's what I want to do.
That's great. It's absolutely fantastic to talk to you about this whole area. And there's no doubt, like, you know, there's a lot more to talk about too. But, you know, it's like we were saying, it's just like a start of the conversation. It's like a long one, but like it's still really just the tip of the iceberg. So thank you very much, Daniel, for your time, sharing all the and your story and everything. It's absolutely fantastic.
Really do appreciate you giving up some time to have me along just to talk about it. And hopefully your listeners have stuck through and learned and taken away a few things, some tips and tricks and that sort of thing. But yeah, I'm really grateful for you to give me the time and the platform to talk about something that's really important and close to me and you and everyone else as well.
My pleasure. And it's that time. Say goodbye to everyone, Daniel.
See you later, everyone. Thank you for sticking with me, and hope you all have a good morning or afternoon, depending on when you're listening to it.
Thanks, everyone. See ya.
Thanks for tuning in to today's episode of Grow Your Business. Have a great day, and we'll see you next time here at the Grow Your Business Podcast.